Is it or is it not rude to use a bicycle bell?
I don't think it's rude.
To make people get on. Okay. Because I don't really see people doing it in the States, but
and also yell
it seems like a handy... Unless
yeah, that's
wearing...
much less rude.
Definitely take that route. Okay, good to know. Welcome to another episode of WonkCast, the independent student podcast of the George Washington University's Trachtenberg School of Public Policy and Public Administration. My name's Jessica Blackband, and I'll be moderating this episode. We have two co-hosts with us on the pod today, Gabe and Eli. You want to introduce yourselves?
Hi, I'm Gabe. I'm a first-year MPP studying urban development and homelessness.
Hi, I'm Eli Richman. I am also a first-year MPP studying technology policy.
And we have a special guest today on the pod, here to talk to us about transit-oriented development, and specifically bike shares in the D.C. area, which is a topic we've touched on a little bit in previous pods, but we're excited to dig into it a little bit more. So, Raj, do you want to introduce yourself?
My name's Raj. I'm a first-year MPP student focusing on transit-oriented development. Part of being at GW, I served as an Air Force officer for 5 years, with previous experience with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers and the General Services Administration.
Awesome. Yeah, glad to have you on. So before we get started, I was curious, you said you bike around D.C. quite a lot yourself. So I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit, just to kind of open the episode, about what it's like to bike around D.C., like kind of your experience as a user. I don't know if you use any of the bike shares or anything like that, but...
So I am a bike share user. Mm-hmm. I use Capital Bike Share predominantly. My experience has been very positive. There's some areas that are probably less safe than others. However, biking around the NoMa and Capitol Hill area and Pennsylvania Avenue, noticed specifically barriers and painted bike lanes that are fairly intuitive. And you can get around D.C. pretty quickly. I was able to bike from Pentworth down to Foggy Bottom in about 20 to 30 minutes.
Wow.
And it's an enjoyable experience. There's definitely a long way to go for D.C. to become fully safe and... making sure that bicyclists and pedestrians have full access to the city. However, I think DC's infrastructure is fairly sophisticated.
Awesome, yeah.
So you don't find yourself fearing for your life in your daily commute?
Oh, I do sometimes, but that's not a result necessarily of the infrastructure. Sometimes I think there are user issues and other bicyclists and pedestrians that create issues. Mostly what I've noticed is people just not paying attention to where they're going, specifically pedestrians. I think people spend a lot of time looking at their phones, which I am also guilty of. However, they do end up blocking roadways and unknowingly walking into intersections or walking into bike lanes. That's probably been the biggest issue I've seen so far.
Yeah, that's funny. I always had more problems with pedestrians biking around Florida State's campus than I did with, like, cars or anything like that.
Yeah. What I've noticed is most of the time people in vehicles are cognizant and they're paying attention to you.
Yeah.
And you just have to kind of pay attention to which side of the vehicle you're on and making sure that you're not following too closely. And if you're at a stoplight, maybe making eye contact with the driver, if you're going through an intersection, kind of doing the same things you do as if you're driving, you know, making sure that you have visual contact with who's in front of you.
So what are the cost barriers and quality barriers for Capital Bike Share? Like, I mean, there's multiple bike share programs in D.C., but this is the one, right, that's run by the government. So is it cheaper than the private bike shares? What's the deal there?
Capital Bike Share does use a more expensive bike than the dockless bike shares. However, there are pluses and minuses to each. If you are a bike share user, and if you download the apps for all the other bike share services, you'll probably have a 70-80% chance of finding a bike within a quarter mile of you. However, if you're only dependent on bike share, your odds of finding an available bicycle dramatically go down, especially on the weekend. This past weekend, the weather was perfect, so I decided to do a bike ride from Georgetown over to Capitol Hill. And what I was struggling to find was it took me maybe looking 3 or 4 blocks away for me to find an available Capital Bike Share bike.
Wow.
And personally, I don't use the dockless option. I would prefer to contribute my money towards a program that the city's using.
Yeah.
However, if you're in a rush or you're traveling with your family, dockless bike share is also a very viable option.
But, is dockless so private?
Can you
private
explain that a little
sorry
bit more? Why is the city not utilizing the dockless bikes the same way?
So... this is a fairly contentious issue. People can park dockless bikes, or you've seen dockless scooters within the District of Columbia. And some constituents see it as being clutter. There's not necessarily an accountability system, making sure that it's not blocking people's driveways. There's a disability issue with people who use wheelchairs and who need full access to the sidewalk. So it's fairly contentious, and I don't think DC has the political capital yet to implement a dockless system. And I don't really think they need to. I think they've created kind of an induced demand market where they've created somewhat of the infrastructure and they've created a little bit of the demand for people to start biking again. What many bicycle enthusiasts have noticed in the District of Columbia is that people will start on bike share and then they'll buy their own bicycle and then they'll kind of develop a hobby from this. So I think the way the system working right now isn't perfect. However, I think it's creating an environment where drivers are going to get used to seeing more bicyclists and bicyclists are going to gain more confidence on the road. And ultimately, I think this is going to act as a very good substitute for Metro, which I know people kind of complain about as not being reliable. But kind of the principle behind developing an efficient urban center is to provide people more than one way to get from point A to point B. I think there has been a heavy demand. There's been an assumption of heavy demand on vehicle use for the past 50 years. And I think what's happening right now is we're seeing a major paradigm shift in terms of the way people choose to travel.
So what do you think is driving that? Because I do know currently in the district there are several lawsuits between churches and church communities and bike organizations about the use of curbside space on Sundays and bike groups who are trying to advocate for barriers to dedicate that space to bike travel so it's safer versus church groups who want that to remain an open space so their members don't have to walk a long way from a distant lot or distant parking spot to the church on Sundays. And it's not difficult to see that those are very coded groups for newcomers with the bike group trying to reform DC to a more conducive, bike-friendly atmosphere and traditional residents who are trying to preserve their way of life.
Right. So I actually went to an advisory neighborhood commission meeting where they were talking about this same issue. And currently it's unresolved. However, Director Meridian, who is also a GW alum, has this issue on his radar. I don't know if there's a viable solution yet. However, I think ultimately DC's future infrastructure plan has to incorporate a model where streets are intuitive for users. And I think part of that is going to be possibly discouraging parking in some areas. And I think every parking space that you issue, that you mark off is a certain amount of square footage that can't be used for housing or for protected bike lanes or for sidewalks.
But on the other hand, I mean, the district, over a sixth of its residents are above the age of 65, right? There are a considerable amount of people here with some degree of different ability to walk places, that might be a wheelchair, but it might just be, I have a condition with my leg where it's hard for me to walk more than four blocks without taking a little rest. So with that sort of population, I mean, we can't just wholesale throw out parking lots. I'm not trying to suggest that bikes are bad. I mean, I personally love biking, and I think biking is fantastic. But it is a difficult thing to try to wrap our heads around.
Right, and I don't think it has to be a binary where the parking around the specific church has to become a protected bike. I think there can be a fair compromise, or the bike lanes can be rerouted around that church. But there are passionate stakeholders on both ends of that argument.
Yeah.
And both have validity in their arguments. However, I think the future of what the district is going to look like is going to become much more friendly for pedestrians and bicyclists.
So, well, I was wondering, you mentioned before we started recording about this Vision Zero initiative, which was focused on safety. Obviously, one of the big reasons that, I mean, I biked a lot in college, but I often felt pretty unsafe, and I think I would feel pretty intimidated biking around DC, honestly. And part of that is obviously safety concerns. So are there some things that DC is doing that are really innovative related to making people feel more safe when they're on their bikes?
I'm really glad you actually brought that up, because DC did a survey and they found that there are a big factor that's preventing people from getting into biking or from using roadways as pedestrians is fear of getting struck by a vehicle.
Yeah.
I went to a Vision Zero summit pretty recently, and DC laid out a fairly ambitious goal of completely eliminating traffic fatalities by the year 2024. Which might not totally fit into that SMART model that we're all kind of taught to build.
SMART goals, yeah.
Right. However, DC has identified certain intersections that have higher rates of fatalities or injuries, and they're going to do a better job of putting in traffic signals and protected bike lanes to make sure that drivers are aware that there are pedestrians and bicyclists, and that pedestrians and bicyclists can navigate those streets in a safer manner.
So is the for people who don't live here, there's a thoroughfare through Pennsylvania Avenue that goes from the White House mm-hmm. to the Capitol that's a bike-only lane in the center of mm-hmm. traffic. So mm-hmm. it's protected on both sides from traffic, so you're not in where buses would be turning. Is that part of this safety reform, is trying to rethink the layout of streets?
Absolutely. I do know that the fairway you're talking about on Pennsylvania Avenue, my first time actually riding down it was last week, and I finally got the courage to ride down there kind of in the middle of the day, and I found the experience to be intuitive, and it was actually a little bit of fun. It's not as dangerous or as scary as you would think. And I think the planners did a really good job of routing bicycle traffic around the mm-hmm. Capitol. I think they know that there are a lot of commuters who come in from Virginia to the Capitol. And they've developed a fairly fair and safe system, in my opinion. It can be better in some neighborhoods. Riding around NoMa, the big issue that I've seen is that people who are DDoT when they're doing construction, they'll block the bike lanes, or there will be panels lifted off the road to kind of create barriers for bicyclists. And I think that kind of developing standard operating procedures for construction, making sure that lanes aren't blocked, I think is going to be a big part of making sure that DC can reach that Vision Zero goal.
Are there any other, like, street design components that they're considering, like making streets, I don't know, adding dedicating speed bumps, streets. Dedicating, but other than that, like improving visibility, anything like that?
Currently, a major initiative is painted roadways and physical barriers, bollards, to act as barriers between drivers and pedestrians mm-hmm. and bicyclists. However, I'm not totally familiar of any other infrastructure projects.
Okay.
Painted roadways in general are just a good idea for people who are seeing impaired, right? Mm-hmm. Because a lot of those bumpy plaques that they put in front of crosswalks are supposed to be bright yellow or bright orange so that you can see them even if you're partially blind. But the city just has a nasty habit of painting them all this drab gray so that it looks nice.
Like the road.
Yeah, and it looks like the road, and it doesn't stand out. But that means that people who are walking towards it won't be able to see it, which is its one function, to be seen and felt. So it's nice that they're focusing more on painting things.
Yeah, and just to kind of give you all a perspective of how many bike users there are in D.C., approximately 5% of the city's commuters use bicycles. On most days, there are 1,100 dockless bicycles in D.C. In October in 2016, there were 338,000 trips by Capital Bike Share and 54,000 trips used by dockless bike share. And out of those that use both Capital Bike Share and dockless bike share, 40 to 50% use those to get to and from work.
Wow. Mm. I would not have guessed it was that high.
Yeah, so that actually doesn't square with some other research I've seen on this. I was reading a study about bike shares in China. It was a study by Liu Zhili, Zhudong, and Cheng Wen. They were studying bike shares in Beijing. And they found that really a very small percentage of the people who were using the bike shares did use them for transit. He said usually for transit you needed a longer trip, and people were mostly using the bike shares for transit and tourism, like around the most dense part of the city, like basically as an alternative to walking.
The market might be a little bit different in that area. I know this study was exclusively for DC, and I think the planners who are instituting Capital Bike Share saw this system as kind of an extension for metro stops, where maybe metro or the bus doesn't extend far enough to certain neighborhoods. People could use bike share to get to them.
So with that, I mean, there is a serious issue of around 80% of the district's land use being used by a very small portion of total residents, right? Most of the residents in D.C. are concentrated into a very small area, and then the rest of the land is spread pretty evenly from single-family homes and large estates. So with that, I mean, in order to really maximize bike share and bike travel, you kind of need to either build a bunch of metro lines to bring you to bikes where they're more useful, or build up those areas, which is an area of severe contention for the comprehensive plan, which is being debated right now. There's some 3,000 amendments that Office of Planning has to chew through.
Do we have any data on how how equitable the distribution of bikes are?
I'm actually glad you brought that up. I did listen to Grace's transportation podcast. Yeah. I know equity was a big part of kind of discouraging bike share use. And I looked up for Ward 7 and 8. In Ward 8, they have 5.6% of the share of Capital Bike Share. and 6.1% of the dockless bike share, and Ward 7 has about 4.9% of both. And if you look at kind of the outlying wards around the center of the downtown area, it seems to be fairly equitable.
That's good to hear.
However, there are some issues that go along with bike share that go into that overarching equity argument. There's a nonprofit in Philadelphia called the Better Bike Share Partnership that has made a concerted effort to make bike share a little bit more equitable. They've developed 20 bike share stations in underserved neighborhoods. They've made sure that these docked bike share stations can accept cash as payment methods, and they've also provided systems of discounted prices. So the equitable nature of bike share is on the national radar. However, I think as this is still new to the district and new nationally, I think it's going to take some time for some of these underserved neighborhoods to get equal access to multimodal transportation methods.
And there's still substantial lack of access to metro and bus transportation
in
neighborhoods, so that really surprised me.
Absolutely. I mean, part of this induced demand model is kind of where DC is hoping to create the conditions to create an environment where the private market will step in, where DC can't necessarily extend its reach far enough. I know that argument's been used for Uber and Lyft, subsidizing those rides in neighborhoods where people can't necessarily access metro or bike stops easily. And I think some planners see bike share as part of that solution.
So for I'm assuming the dockless bikes are mostly private companies?
They are.
Is that right? I'm interested in why the private companies went for the dockless bikes instead of the docked, for like trying to compete with Capital Bike Share. Was it just because there's less of like an infrastructure kind of component?
Isn't it a district mandate that they... I thought it had something to do with actually like how the district wrote its law on the dock.
I would imagine it would be very hard for a private company to get a permit to permanently work the land like that.
Yeah,
you need to.
That's what I figured.
And also, because I think it's something like you get 18 bikes on a docked bike share for 2 parking lots, and so if you're talking about biking as a commuting option, that seems like an okay trade-off, but it does mean getting rid of those parking spots, and those do belong to the city.
Right.
So there's some difficulty getting that done.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
And there's also a little bit of risk associated with the dockless option. I mean, if DC, I'm assuming if they're willing to make the investment into dockless and it fails, that's a large amount of tax revenue that gets wasted.
Right.
Where I think OFO, Jump, Linebike, these are all firms that have been successful in other markets, and I think they're willing to take that risk and move it to DC.
Yeah.
What's the quality comparison like between those two bikes? I mean, we talked about this a little bit with Grace, and I just know from anecdotal evidence that the green bikes are bad bikes. Like, they're really bad. And Capital bikes are not great, but at least they're maintained, and they're made out of quality materials versus the dockless bikes.
I think ultimately, as a consumer, it's going to come down to what is closest to you, determining where you need to go.
For sure. I'm just worried about if we're trying to achieve safety as our goal. Riding a bike with a cheap aluminum frame, if you're, you know, above 120 pounds, can be a very dangerous thing because it can snap and you can crash and, you get seriously injured if your bike literally breaks. So I'm wondering, are there reported rates on breakages? What's their...
I haven't seen any data on injuries related to dockless bike share. However, this is still a pretty new program. I think this time next year we'll have a little bit more comprehensive data in terms of the safety associated with it, ridership, pricing. But I think it's still pretty early. But that is a very good point to bring up.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting that helmets aren't really a thing.
That's another.
With
that
those.
Is absolutely that's another.
Seems
thing.
Kind of problematic.
And is the Capital bike shares where they have a helmet on the wire? No, I've definitely seen that on a
helmets
bike
are
share.
Encouraged, but they're not
not required or
which
provided.
Which is terrifying because that cracking your head open is lethal, and it's so easy to get a helmet. It's literally just a piece of styrofoam. It's just they're kind of expensive, and people would steal them or vandalize them.
So I belong to an organization called the Washington Area Bicycle Association. And they mandate helmets on any type of public ride. And I think if you belong to one of these groups, just as part of a liability, that's covering for liability, is you're going to be required to wear a helmet. However, There are just some jurisdictions in this country where that's not required. I used to live in Wyoming where people were not required to wear helmets while motorcycling.
Oh my God.
And people took pride in that. They would actively ride around without helmets on the interstate.
That bums me out.
It's pretty terrible. It does not fall into...
you guys ever been to a gun show?
I have not.
I have not experienced that.
But, it probably doesn't fall into the categories of Vision Zero. And, I'm sure later on, as we get crash data, that DC might make different mandates and policy decisions based on injury rates, but you're right.
On the side of the city and the companies, I can totally see where they're coming from with not including helmets. I mean,
oh, yeah.
Lice, theft,
it's kinda gross.
Vandalism. And for a helmet to work, it can't have been broken before, right? So it works as an individual. You know when your helmet's been broken,
right,
but it's hard to detect a crack in a, plastic shell around a piece of styrofoam.
Mm. It's also hard to make a one-size-fits-all helmet. And if your helmet doesn't fit right, then it's pretty much useless.
You can get the adjustable ones.
Exactly, yeah.
I can probably do more harm if it doesn't fit right.
Mm-hmm. Maybe having, a free helmet program might be a way to...
Like, if you're someone who's commuting regularly and you want, a...
Or even if you're not. I mean, they don't have to be, the greatest helmets. They can just be those, raw styrofoam with a little bit of fabric on the outside. Really cheap helmets. But, any amount of helmet, right, is good.
And, and just kind of anecdotally, the people I've seen riding around D.C. typically wear appropriate safety gear. They have reflective belts on their backpacks. They wear helmets. I think it's a small percentage of people I see who don't wear helmets.
Yeah.
So it does it diminishes that sense of if I really wanted to, I could just jump on this bike and go home.
Yeah.
If you have to plan for it that far in advance, it seems to me that reduces some
what of I have been doing, what I would encourage your listeners to do is when I go out on the weekends is I bring my bicycle helmet with me. And if I want to go somewhere and I want to ride my bike home, I will hop on bike share and
What's the cost like?
For a bike helmet?
No. I mean, for a bike share.
So it's $2 for the first 30 minutes, and after that you get charged a higher fare. However, there are annual membership rates, and there are plenty of people who contribute to annual membership for Capital Bike Share. There are a lot of positive qualities of bike share. You don't have to worry about your bike getting stolen. You don't have to carry around your bike lights with you whenever you park your bike. And there's less space within your home that you have to store the bike. So I think there are a lot of good qualities of this program. However, they're not high-performance bicycles. If you ride up 15th Street near Adams Morgan, that's a very challenging hill. And I tried that on Capital Bike Share, and I couldn't do it.
Mm-hmm. So a slightly less lethal problem with biking as a transit solution has been specifically here in D.C. And I have a bike here in D.C., but I never use it because the weather is awful 95% of the time. It's either sweltering and it feels like a minute of bike riding would cause me to lose all the moisture in my body, or it's freezing and you don't want to be outside for that long. So does that limit the market penetration in DC specifically?
I'm sure it certainly does. I think the people who rely on bicycles for commuting purposes will go whether the weather is bad or it's good. But I think the people who are on the fringe of deciding whether or not they're going to take Metro or bike share will probably use Metro when the weather's bad. There was this article in Greater Washington that examined whether or not people used a bike share as a substitute for Metro when Metro was delayed or if Metro wasn't functioning correctly. And they found that for the most part, people don't substitute to bike share when Metro is delayed. Mm-hmm. I think there's this culture in D.C. that you can blame the Metro if you're late for an event. And it's widely accepted.
You totally can, though.
I would much rather be late for work than show up dripping with sweat.
Right.
Yes.
Exactly. Ruined clothes after a 45-minute bike ride.
Yeah.
So using it as an alternative to Metro, the price point you mentioned, $2 for the first half an hour, that makes it more expensive than the bus.
Yeah.
Do you think getting it cheaper than the bus is important for increasing its use as a transit option?
I think so. But I think for the most part, DC is trying to encourage people to be active and engage in physical activity. I think that for the most part, people are going to make determinations on their own of what transit option is best for them. And that's kind of part of this multimodal approach. It's not necessarily to saturate the bicycle market, but to look at all different types of demand and see if they can satisfy those market requirements. I think people who rely on bus ridership are probably going to continue to rely on bus ridership. I think people who rely on Metro are probably continue to do that. However, there's a fringe portion of our population that might lean more towards riding their bicycle, and this is to satisfy that need.
Yeah.
So if the goal, this is diverging a little bit, but if the goal for this is to encourage people to consume personal bicycles, to go out, buy actual bike, nice road bike, maybe that's not the goal, but that is a transition that can happen. DC really sucks when it comes to taking your bike on the metro is not allowed.
Oh, really?
It's not during commuter hours, which is the one time where I think, oh, I should have my bike on the subway
totally.
Because I've just ridden it to the subway station. In addition to that, there are very few places to lock your bike up at the subway that aren't exposed, literally out from underneath an awning or in a not great location. You know, there are high transit areas where there are a lot of people going by. Someone might take your bike. I don't have one of those heavy-duty super locks, and I just don't trust people that much. So I don't feel comfortable leaving my bike at the metro station, and there really aren't alternatives for storage. I mean, my dad was in town last week, and he commented on that and then had this kind of cool idea to have essentially a laundromat for bikes where you can go hang your bike up, and it rotates around into a locked cage, and then... You know,
there's those
whatever.
Box things. Have you guys seen those?
But those are really space inefficient.
Yeah, I mean, they are.
The nice thing about having
some
location.
They're not like stacked on top of each other.
Yeah, a location where you can give your bike, like a city-run bike dump for your bike to sit. You get your coat check tag.
That's so cool.
And can go on the metro. I mean, it would be expensive, but it might really encourage. I know I personally, I would stop riding the bus and I would start biking to Courthouse because it's a 10-minute bike ride. It's super easy. It's flat. It's just a really long walk, and the bus is right there.
That sounds like a really cool idea.
And if I could bike, like, to the metro and then get back on my bike once I got into the city, because I live in Virginia, I would totally bike all over D.C. and just, like, not take the metro.
Yeah, I get where they're coming from. I mean, they only have one track at a time,
sure.
Going one direction.
Yeah.
They only have 8 cars at most in a train. Most trains have 6. Mm. So the actual space for bikes is incredibly limited, and you want to leave a lot of that for strollers and people with wheelchairs and crutches. So I get where they're coming from with that. Probably expensive to attach a bike car at the end. But some sort of storage mechanism for commuters along transit lines I think would be really useful.
I think this is still a fairly new field and the market's rapidly evolving, but who knows? I mean, in 2 or 3 years that something like that could appear. But I think that the docked option allows you to get out of the metro, ride your bike to work, hopefully have a bike share stop there, dock your bike, and then go home.
Mm-hmm.
But for personal use, I think that the personal use bicycle community within DC is a fairly high level of proficiency in terms of deciding where they're going to walk their bikes up, how they're going to get to work. There's a bike shop near DuPont, I think it's called the Bike Rack. But the vendors there, I mean, they're very good about giving people advice in terms of what types of locks to use, how to get to and from work. And I think there are a lot of unwritten secrets in terms of bike commuting that exist within DC that a lot of these associations have.
Mm-hmm.
But I think your idea is cool, and I think it'd be awesome to see that in DC at some point.
Yeah.
I'm curious if there's, like, from the city of DC's perspective, is there, like, an emissions reduction rationale behind a lot of this? Is that driving it at all?
I think that it was one of the overarching arguments for allowing bike share into DC. I have no data on the emissions figures, but just looking at the percentage of commuters who use bicycles to get to and from work, I'm sure it's making some impact. I don't know if it's negligible, but...
Yeah, I just don't know if the city has, like, emissions reduction goals or anything in there. Keeping track of that, but I'd be interested to know.
Well, the framework for the comprehensive plan element that came out recently does not include green space or specific comments on emissions or affordable housing or gentrification or displacement. It mentions affordable housing twice. Transportation is mentioned because it's a new element. They're saying, so basically how the comprehensive plan works is there's 26 quote-unquote elements that are specific targeted sections, like one for energy, one for transportation, one for housing, one for homelessness, all that. The framework is the underpinning law that makes all of those elements function.
Mm.
You're supposed to publish everything together one package so that voters and the council and the mayor can say, oh, this is good, oh, this is bad, this is really going to screw everything up. They've only published the framework element, which is generic, general, and seems very skewed to developers. So in that framework element, they've talked about transportation. They have not talked extensively about the environment or about environmental conservatism. So it'll be interesting to see what their environmental policy framework element looks like.
Very interesting. And so what role does this, like, transit-oriented development concept that you brought up at the beginning play in that process?
I'm actually really happy you brought that up. So on average, in rural communities, the median income is around 4% lower than in urban communities. Mm-hmm. So kind of the overarching philosophy of this transit-oriented development is to give people equal access to opportunities. The good jobs are going to be in downtown business centers. And if you can transport somebody in a safe, affordable, and reliable manner to and from that opportunity point, I think we're going to make a more equitable society. I think people forget about that sometimes, that rural communities are sometimes the biggest victims of this gigantic growing wage and skills gap in our society.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah. So can you, just in case it hasn't come across, how would you describe transit-oriented development as a concept or an approach to design?
So when you're looking at planning a community, I think transit-oriented development is making sure that you plan a community in a sense that you provide people more than one way to get access to food, education, work, and recreation. Mm-hmm. I know we've been talking about gentrification a lot, and there's a community near Oakland called Fruitvale that has kind of been a refuge to the gentrification that's been happening in the Bay Area. And they've maintained their cultural identity. It was primarily Latino before the Silicon Valley boom, and it still is. But they're also seeing a rise in median income and home prices. So this community is benefiting from the rise in property value in the area. And a big part of that success is what many planners have said is transit-oriented development of the community from cradle to grave. That people who live here don't necessarily have to rely on their personal vehicle to get to and from work or get their kids to school.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really...
I brought that up in the last transit episode we did about how important it is. I mean, we love to toot the horn of the open, free, egalitarian market, and that really only works if everyone can get to the open, free, and egalitarian market in an even way. And so I think absolutely transit is essential to that. And in our last episode, we talked about the internet being the virtual version of that.
Yeah.
Of the virtual transit network to bring everyone to a piece of information.
I think the internet is a good conduit. However, I think there is little you can do to replace that face-to-face interaction.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah,
I was just tying that same need for ubiquitous access to our other discussion.
It's a common theme.
Yeah, for our repeat listeners.
There was one other kind of category of things I wanted to talk about, which is you mentioned that we have some data that one of the main reasons people don't bike in D.C. is because they're afraid of the safety consequences, which is not necessarily, I would have guessed it was more like a convenience thing or to do with the weather and things like that. So it seems like taking into account how humans respond to whatever infrastructure we put in place is really important. I read a study for one of my classes that was done, it was published in the Journal of Transportation, and the authors were trying to figure out what they could do to kind of persuade people to live in places that were more accessible transit-wise. And they found that if they just put information about the public transportation options available in brochures about various housing complexes, even that were in sort of a similar area, people were more likely to select the options that had more public transportation, which is kind of interesting.
That is interesting.
So they were drawing people to places where there were transit hubs already just by making people more aware.
That's very cool.
Yeah. I'm just wondering if there's anything that you've read about or seen that kind of uses those little nudges.
So DDOT, the District Department of Transportation, uses some of those nudge policies. There's a very comprehensive and detailed map that outlines every protected bike lane. It's kind of, you can see a clear route from major business centers to where people usually live in the suburbs. Mm. And to me, when I looked at this as kind of a new resident in the district, I saw that there was probably clear access and to and from work, and it would be safe. And to me, that was an encouraging prospect, and I saw that as a very positive nudge policy that DDoT put out.
Yeah, that's really cool. I just think there's a lot of, like, potential there.
Yeah, marketing is very cool.
Yeah, in particular, like, you know, there are a lot of really big infrastructure investments that you could make that are very costly, but before we do that, I think it's interesting to think about what are, like, smaller things that we can do to just sort of
tweak people's incentives a little.
Yeah, and get people using things that already exist. So, yeah. Well, Raj, is there anything that you wanted to bring up on this topic that you feel like is important for people to get a comprehensive understanding of transit-oriented development?
Nothing else, but I'd encourage your listeners to maybe on one of these nice spring days to hop on a bicycle and just go and check out the roads for yourself. And I think you'd be surprised at how safe and efficient it is to travel via bicycle in the District of Columbia.
When I first came here, on my first day, I was walking around the mall and got tired, so I rented a bike. And it was super easy for someone who had never been anywhere near the mall, who lived on the West Coast his entire life, to navigate and to figure it out. And admittedly, those streets are pretty straight and numbered and lettered, but still, it was a breeze.
Yeah. Well, awesome. This was a great conversation. Thanks, Raj.
Thanks for having me on. It was a blast.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming. We were all fairly skeptical about bike sharing.
Oh, really?
I'm skeptical about it.
Skeptical about what part of it?
It seems unsafe. There's not quality control. It's incredibly environmentally damaging because most of those bikes get thrown away. Those little non-dockless ones, the city maintains theirs because they...
They're made of
quality material, but the dockless bikes are designed to be ridden for X amount of days and then thrown away because they're really poor material, and they're not recycled. Or at least they're, you know, it's not easy to recycle a bunch of rubber and a bunch of plastic. You can probably recycle the aluminum from the frame.
It's expensive.
But it's expensive to recycle the aluminum from the frame. I don't know how much of that they actually do.
Yeah.
I'm also skeptical of it from just a pure, like, transportation option. You know, we talked about some of its limitations, but we didn't really talk about the alternatives so much. And, like, just on a lot of these metrics, you know, we mentioned, like, emissions reductions.
Yeah.
Well, like, buses and trains get you so much of the way there just from having transportation that's A, shared, and B, that runs on electricity.
Yeah.
And is accessible to people with disabilities.
Right. And so...
Yeah. We also have a huge, you know, we have obesity problems and cardiovascular issues in the States because people aren't getting enough exercise. So there's another portion of the population that could benefit greatly from having, like, a more active method
of
transportation.
That's true. Those people, again, are part of the group with disabilities who will not be able to access the bike transit. So really it's the cuspers who could become obese later in life. Yeah, so for sure, health needs to be promoted a lot more than it is. Michelle Obama did a lot, but there's a huge amount to go. It's more just, I like the idea of getting a lot of people to bike.
Yeah.
Cities like Davis, California are awesome because they have dedicated bike transit. They're flat. Everyone bikes. Everyone loves biking, and it's safe because there are a lot of bikers. But getting to that point is a pretty difficult battle, and I don't know if DC's price point is right.
Yeah.
I get it that they're probably using a lot of that money to subsidize the cost of the program because I imagine it's incredibly expensive to run, right? Every day you have to cart bikes back and forth. You have to do quality checks all the time. There's constant maintenance.
So, I wouldn't be surprised if they're losing money on the $2 per
hour. I'm sure they're losing money on the $2, but I'm saying, like, at least it's something that they're spending. And I know DC has a lot of extra money that... It's not extra, right? It's going to all sorts of needy programs, but perhaps they could reallocate a little more to drop that at least below the minimum cost of a metro transit.
Right.
Right, because I can get from my house to downtown for the same cost going by metro and bus than I can for the bike. And I would much rather do the bike than the bus, but the bike is going to be more expensive in the long run than the bus by 75 cents per ride. So... That's difficult.
And that's if you don't have a transfer and if you don't use your smart trip card.
Yeah.
You know, both of those things reduce the price even further. So we really need to get the bikes down to, like, a dollar per ride for it to be a cheaper option.
Yeah. That's a big honestly, push. I guess the not having it be free per ride is so then there's some need to give credit card information. Is that, like, what's the justification for it not being free?
My understanding was that it was just a user fee to make sure that you weren't just using the bikes willy-nilly.
Okay, so
to give users some sense of responsibility for them so that you weren't just either taking it out and treating it horribly or just taking it out for the heck of it even if you didn't really need a rocket.
Right.
Yeah, just walking around with it.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense.
Maybe, I mean, I like the 30-minute window. Maybe 45-minute would be more accurate for most people's commute time. Yeah. But, yeah, the having that cost be very low, like 75 cents, and then having it skyrocket after that, I think, is a good way to approach it. Mm-hmm.
But even if it was, I mean, I still don't know if I really see it as the future of transit because of all the other options.
I don't think that's how DC sees it either. I think it's probably a sort of, let's diversify our portfolio as much as we can, because every little bit of traffic we can get off the metro and off the road is a benefit to us as a city.
Yeah. I mean, that makes sense to me.
Yeah.
And frankly, even bike shares make sense to me to a certain extent.
Yeah.
I just don't really think, they don't make as much sense to me as a transit option. They are a great recreational option.
Yeah, yeah. And in D.C., that works particularly well because a lot of people using them are going, you know, they're going around the mall. They're
trying to get
to Capitol Hill, whatever. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you want to go around the mall and go to different museums, like, it's probably the ideal option. Awesome.
And if that helps reduce pedestrian congestion to some degree,
it's all in those big dirt runways, so it's not... The congestion issue isn't really solved, but it definitely takes people off the bus route that goes around there, so there's much less tour bus congestion, and there's much less car congestion around there. So that's nice. Yeah.
And I think, honestly, like, it kind of, with all the land use regulations that DC has, it sort of has to be run by the city, kind of like we talked about with Raj, like, a private company acquiring enough space to do that, I don't know, it just probably wouldn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's interesting, but it seems like something that would work super differently and to varying degrees of success, depending very much on the city that you're in.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think almost a better way to approach it is using DCPS funds to... District Public Schools. So, so they, I mean, there's literally billions of dollars allocated to DCPS every year, and a lot of that is spent on administrative costs and stuff like that. But there are program costs, and they are trying to find new ways to incorporate classroom atmospheres that are more skills-based and less show up and take attendance and then leave-based. And maybe having some sort of bike program could be a good way for students to learn how to use bikes early on, right? I mean, students are already given a free metro pass and free bus pass, right? There's no district buses in the school doing just school stuff. It's all done by Metrobus. But maybe having some sort of bike-based approach, like giving free bikes to kids.
And that would also solve the helmet problem, because there's helmet storage and probably, you can give it to them in school as well.
Yeah, so you can... I mean, certainly you run into the same equity issues that you run into with the Capital Bike Share, but maybe having, like, some shop classes that are all about bike maintenance and have facilities on campus for bike maintenance.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there are programs that do this in the nonprofit sector that are hugely successful.
Mm-hmm.
There's a really big one I know about in Portland. So maybe trying to incorporate some of that into public schools.
Yeah.
Cool.
That'd be pretty fun.
Yeah.
Be a good after-school program doing bike trips around the Capitol.
I would love that.
And you can see, like, sort of infant versions of that kind of thing on college campuses. Some of them will have shared bikes. It certainly is no, I don't think there are any great infrastructure stories there to highlight, but, you know, they exist.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, yeah, thanks, Raj, for coming on the pod and for talking about this issue. We've touched on it a lot in previous episodes, but I feel like we kind of dug into some new elements of the issue, so. Thanks for listening to GW Wonkcast, brought to you by the Trachtenberg School of Public Policy and Public Administration. For more wonkiness, you can follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Our handle is at GW Wonkcast. You can send us love letters or hate mail by emailing us at wonkcast@gmail.com. And be sure to rate us and subscribe. We're now on Stitcher Radio, Google Play, and iTunes. Today's show was produced by Maggie Gallagher, and our editors are Eric Ledoux and Eli Richmond. Music is by Pelly Gunther. Thanks for listening.